Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, darlings. Comment ça va? It's Mummy Sybil Brunson. Oh, I hope we're all ça va bienning tonight. Darlings, Mummy is back, believe it or not, back in her hometown of New York City. I'm broadcasting to you or podcasting to you live from high atop the Chrysler Building in the Café Berlin, the revolving ballroom of the Café Berlin. I am thrilled to be back in New York City with my wonderful muse / producer-atrix, Gwendolyn Holdenberry, who's in the sound booth with the technicians and everything. She holds everything down there. She is a woman surrounded by rough-hewn, dirty-handed, filthy fingernailed technicians and sound men and best boys and all the people that run the show while Mummy's out on the dance floor. Gwendolyn, how is it going in there? Have you got your bullwhip with you? I hope so. And your cattle prod to shock them in the pajubies, as Dorothy Michael said in Tootsie. Are you holding everyone down in there properly?
Oh, absolutely. I brought my pet scorpion.
All right, well, darlings, Mummy is back in New York, and for those of you that have been following me, on my Tourette's around the country, there's nothing fake about those, darlings. Those are real, and I want you to know that I only post a third of the Tourette's I could. I actually am traveling much more than just the Tourette's you see. We have been traveling for work, George's work, almost nonstop, and we have been linking. I come back to New York for maybe 24 hours and then leave again once the laundry's done. But we've actually been going from one place to another rather than coming all the way back home, and we're about to go on another marathon like that, including, drum roll please, Fargo, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Omaha. I think I'm going to write a musical called The Homo from Omaha or something like that. Or Oklahoma. It might be Oklahoma, but I'm not quite sure yet. Anyway, we are traveling nonstop. We've been traveling all over the country. By the way, for those of you that were curious, I was in San Jose, California, and I did give your regards to Burt Bacharach. We were there for the fires, and although San Jose wasn't burning, it was completely covered by the smoke from the San Francisco area, the terrible, terrible Kincade fire out there. This is no joke. It's interesting. I know some of you follow the news on CNN or wherever, but it's really interesting to hear the perspective of the country. It's sort of like the way 9/11 happened. I was living in Greenwich Village during 9/11, and for those of us that were watching it from our street corners, frankly, I could walk to the World Trade Center from our front door in about 18 minutes. It was a 60-second cab ride to the bottom of the World Trade Center from where I was living. I had friends uptown in New York, in Midtown or on the Upper West Side, who almost were living with the World Trade Center disaster as if it was a Will Smith movie or something. Because they weren't in it, and they were only watching it on the news, it didn't seem to register with them the same way. Of course, it registered with them better than people who were in Rye, New York, and it was registering with the people in Rye, New York, better than it was with the people that I knew in Ohio. So it's very interesting how location seems to be the coin of the realm. Out in California, there was no news other than the top item was the fires and the fact that people were evacuating, that you had 3 million people without electrical power, for instance, because PG&E or whatever it is was turning off power lines all over the place to keep fires from starting. So it was very interesting to be out there and then to see what people were posting on Facebook, for instance, and on Twitter And there was a remove almost from it. Nevertheless, I was there. That is where I went to the Winchester Mansion, which is one of the most extraordinary experiences I have ever had in my life. I have gone to many freakish places, and I must tell you that anything that you imagine about that Winchester Mystery House and the myths around it and the history, quote unquote, history behind it and the movie that Helen Mirren did, etc. It's weirder and more fascinating than that to go in there. First of all, to look at it from the outside and then to see aerial shots of how big it is and how truly the haunting with Julie Harris and Claire Bloom it is. I have to do more research. I wonder if Shirley Jackson visited that mansion before she wrote The Haunting, because it is so much like The Haunting and so peculiar in its psychology that I can't recommend it enough. Mummy has been to many, many weird places. You know, I'm one of the few people that I've ever heard of that have been up in the tower of the world of the Chrysler Building, and I mean all the way to the top of the spire, all the way up into the top, to the little tiny rooms that are in the point. This goes down as one of the most bizarre and strange places that I've ever been, and it's just so peculiar in the feeling that you get as you walk through it and you explore it and you hear what happened, especially when it's linked to the San Francisco earthquake of 1906 and what, you know, Sarah Winchester did after that on that morning, what she did. She sealed off 30 entire rooms, finished with furniture, all of the decoration, all of that Victorian / Gothic revival, strange architecture and finishing, all the objet, everything. She sealed those rooms off and never went into them again. She simply moved into another part of the house and continued the construction going on. It's like, oh my goodness, who does that? And the 30 rooms that she sealed off are thousands of square feet. It's like when you say 30 rooms, it's not like a normal 30-room house that you imagine in suburbia. I mean, first of all, how many people have 30 rooms in suburbia? But these were gigantic rooms, a ballroom, tower rooms, everything. And then she cut the top four floors of the house off. First of all, part of them collapsed, so she had to have all the carpenters that were on duty take away the ruin, and then she had the top floor, four floors of her house removed so that her house dropped down to a three-story endless mansion. It goes on and on. Anyway, the point is my travels have been so peculiar. I've been thrilled to be sending you Tourette's, and I've been thrilled that you have been responding and letting me know what you've been thinking. So, and that's why we've been in reruns a couple of times. You know, the fire interfered with me podcasting to you. So Gwendolyn has been very patient, and, you know, she's the ultimate producer and wonderful. So Gwendolyn, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, as always, for being there as my anchor back here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I was really interested in what you would find. I've never been through the Winchester House, but I have friends who have, and they've all come back with, well, just one who said, oh, poof, 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 you know, but everybody else had some kind of adventure to talk about, some kind of experience between
well,
the veil.
Yeah, I had people, and of course it was right near Halloween, I had people saying, oh, Mummy, is it like a haunted castle thing that you'd go to before Halloween in Akron, Ohio, or whatever? I said, well, as a matter of fact, the night, the 3 weeks before Halloween or whatever, they did in fact do a broadcast on the outside of it, or a projection on the outside of the house, which I posted on my Tourette's and on my pages, which was very cute. They have a film of it or a video, and I did in fact put that up because I wanted people to see it. It's very clever when they do those projections on these multi-story buildings. We have them on Saks Fifth Avenue here in New York City for Christmas, and they're becoming more and more sophisticated and more clever. They're really extremely clever. And the one that they did there was extremely fun. It was scary and funny and very witty. And then they were also hiring actors to be strange creatures in the house on special nighttime tours. So during the day, you go on one of the two tours of the house. And if you, like me, you went on both of them, that was great. But after sunset, they would do one tour a night where you would go through the house and they would have set up tableaus in different parts of the house with actors playing people in the house. And what was interesting about it was very clever, Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, I wish you and I could have gone to it because you and I would have rocked with laughter. We would have barfed with laughter. That's right. B-A-R, F as in Frank, E-D. We would have laughed till we vomited because the premise was, this is so clever, the Winchester Historical Society decided, well, they didn't want to make Sarah Winchester a ghoul, and they didn't want to make her dead husband a ghoul, and they didn't want to make them all these ghosts. What they did was, the premise was that the ghosts that they were having these young college actors play or whatever, dinner theater, local dinner theater celebrities or whatever, and the makeup was incredible, and the props were amazing. What they were having them play was people who, listen to this, had wandered away from the tours and had gotten lost in the house and were never found again.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Folks at home, let's capitalize that. O-H-M-Y. Oh, my. If that isn't the wittiest thing in the world. So, in other words, troublesome tourists who had gone on the tour had gotten lost because they had wandered away from the group they were with and had become lost in the house forever. And that was what each of the 12 or the 20 ghosts that were stationed in the turret or in the niche or in the pantry or the whatever were the ghosts. I find that to be just pure genius. And I can only tell you that if Mummy lived in San Jose and was able to, I would have begged, and I'm saying on my knees and given oral sex to the entire history department there, to be one of the ghosts in the house. I can't think of anything I would rather have done every night for 3 weeks at 8 o'clock at night than to have been one of the ghosts in the house who had wandered away from the tour and been, you know, Millicent Ferguson, a third grade school teacher from Perrysburg, Ohio, who had left the tour and became, you know, tangled in the upstairs turret with what blah, 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 whatever. I just think it was so clever that that's what they came up with. It was very cute. And I spoke to people who had been on that tour, that evening tour. They did it for 3 weeks. They only did it once a night, I believe. It was like a 8 o'clock at night tour. And it was at sundown. So they let everything get dark. And then you went in and you paid your money. And then you went on that tour, which was not as big as the other. But the Winchester house being dark and only moderately lit, the Winchester house is not elaborately electrified. When she lived there, it was mostly gaslight, and she came to electricity fairly late. And so the chandeliers and the sconces and everything, most of them are gas fixtures, and some of them have some electrical work. But when we were in there during the day, the electricity, it wasn't a brightly lit place. So I can only imagine that at night, it must be incredibly evocative. I mean, just it must be extraordinary, because in broad daylight, there were whole sections of it that were dark. And the way she conquered that was to put windows between rooms. So she had all of these windows on interior rooms, allowing light to sort of filter in from the next room or two or three over. And I can't even begin to describe that place to you, but I'm just telling you that you need to see it, and you need to dispel any of the stupid publicity about it. She felt that if she didn't keep building rooms that she would die. You know, all the stuff about spiritualists and everything. Yes, some of it's sort of true, but a lot of it is just she was eccentric, and she was a multimillionaire by their standards. She was multimillionaire to carry this off. She had a staff of 14 people in the house as servants, okay? She had a staff of 18 carpenters living on the grounds in their own homes as permanent, round-the-clock, daily carpenters building and building and building. And by the way, when she tore down parts of the house, or when the earthquake took down parts of the house, Sarah Winchester saved every spirally turned piece of wood. Everything that could be salvaged was put into attics and basements to be saved and recycled later. So all the carved stuff, if you see The Haunting, imagine every carved face on every fireplace, every mantle, every piece of stained glass, anything that she had ever had built that was being repurposed or reused, she threw away nothing. And she didn't allow any of them to throw anything away. She was a complete hoarder. And she hoarded all the architectural elements, stone, glass, wood, marble, granite. Everything in the house was used, and then if it was removed or moved to another place, it was never thrown away. Nothing was demolished whimsically. Nothing. It's just beyond belief, beyond belief. The weirdest, weirdest thing. And the feeling you get of walking through there, you feel strange walking through it. It's like going through Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. Mummy's been there elaborately. I've been all through every possible walkable place that they let you go through in Mammoth Cave. It's the weirdest, most wonderful, strange sensation. It's those places. I can't recommend this enough. I'm not going to name him, but I have a friend on Facebook who I've known for a while who is an artist and a designer and a creative person, and is steeped in creativity and portrays himself as an arbiter of taste and creativity. He had the nerve to tell me that he lived in that area for 20 years and never went to either the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum there in San Jose, nor the Winchester House. I was thunderstruck. It's as weird to me as being a New Yorker and never having gone to the Empire State Building, the World Trade Center, the Statue of Liberty, or the Metropolitan Museum. It's like, well, wait a minute. What? Your passport as a New Yorker is seriously in disarray. It's like gay credentials. Yes, exactly. Gwendolyn, it's like gays that I've heard who've never seen The Wizard of Oz. Oh, my dear, you're clearly a straight person from Toledo. You're gay and you've never seen The Wizard of Oz. You're a loser, pal. Your passport has to be revoked, and not only revoked, burned. I have one of my best friends in the world is a movie addict. He claims to be an absolute movie addict. He has never seen The Maltese Falcon. It's like,
oh no. That's not.
He's
an
never
addict.
Seen Casablanca. Wait, he's never seen AFI. AFI recognized Casablanca as the finest American movie ever made. Like a few years back, that was the number one movie. And I have friends who are movie quote unquote addicts. They consider themselves arbiters of movie history and taste who've never seen Casablanca. I'm sorry.
People who haven't seen The Best Years of Our Lives or even have they caught It's a Wonderful Life? I mean,
It's a Wonderful Life. They've never seen It's a Wonderful Life. But they think that Hello, Dolly! With Barbara Streisand and Walter Matthau literally clawing at each other, the spite that the waiters have in their eyes directed at Barbara Streisand. You can see their disdain of her as, you know, she does her sad Mae West, you know, impersonation through the whole thing. It's like she's got as much right to play Dolly Levi. It's like ridiculous. And they think that that's the and there are people that defend Mame with Lucille Ball to me who've never seen The Best Years of Our Life. It's like, are you mad? Are you out of your mind? It's insanity. So I just have to say that if you go, if I can leave anything behind as Sybil Brunchen, I would like to have aroused the curiosity of my listeners and people that I have blogged to and everything to get, you know, it's like, what is it? It's like Mame. Open a new window, open a new door, that song from the musical Mame. It's like, I want you, when you go to these cities, to visit Aunt Delia for Thanksgiving, and it's the first time you've gone there. I want you to avoid staying inside the Marriott Residence Inn and watch TV all day. I want you to go out. I want you to go on Google, because these are tools we have now. We have, you see, in the old days when Gwendolyn and I were little girls, everybody, you had to go to a brochure rack at the local drugstore, and you had to get a brochure about fun things to do in Canton, Ohio. Right? Well, now you can go on your internet, even on your phone, and Google Canton, Ohio, and see the 2.5 things that are worth going to see in Canton, Ohio. Okay? And I want you to try doing that. Gwendolyn and I want you to, when you go to San Jose, California, I want you to go out and see something interesting. Open a new window, open a new door. I want you to go out.
The Hearst Castle. There's the Hearst Castle.
Well, the Hearst Castle. But Gwendolyn, the Hearst Castle is absolutely one of the most extraordinary things. See, that's even bigger than Winchester House. That's bigger than these other things I'm talking about. That's bigger than the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum, which is fascinating.
It's like going to Asheville and not making it to Biltmore.
Exactly. How could you go to Asheville, North Carolina? There's really, and Asheville's lovely, and the climate there is lovely. There's so much that's lovely about that. Why would you go there and not go to the effing Vanderbilt Mansion? It's like a principality. And the story behind it, the fact that Vanderbilt researched all over the United States for a place to build a country, because that's what he basically was doing. He was building a little self-supporting country of its own.
Yeah.
He had his own residence. He had his own dairies, his own crops, his own. He literally created something out of nowhere, by the way, nowhere. There was nothing there to go to except that the climate was nurturing, and he could create a place that would sustain itself with its own people, its own villagers, its own potters, its own candle makers. He created a little city, and he created an estate that was where he would be comfortable and lovely. And it is breathtaking to look at. It's shocking to look at.
So
Gwendolyn's
wonderful.
Point is well taken. Yeah. Gwendolyn's point is well taken. Oh, yeah. Go there. It's an extraordinary experience. I was very lucky many years ago to do a Shakespeare festival there. I did a Shakespeare festival I was in She Stoops to Conquer, and I did a couple of plays there with a bunch of Yaleys and people from Carnegie Mellon, and they were brilliant people, and I was thrilled to have been asked to do it. I didn't even have to audition. They brought me in as a celebrity. I was quite impressed, and this was such a long time ago that Equity only required that I be paid $11 a day. So that tells you how long ago it was.
Do you know, I've got to tell you, do you know that before it got purloined by trash, that Mar-a-Lago was considered a wonderful visit too?
Oh, of course. Well, look who built it. Marjorie Merriweather Post's father, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
They took their money and built that.
It's amazing. Serial.
are suing the son of a bitch, too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to get into politics. I was trying to avoid that. But
Let's move along then.
No. I'm going to acknowledge a couple of quick things. And then I really want to stay happy. First of all, it's fall and Halloween is over and we're heading towards Thanksgiving. So I want to remind everybody that my 31 days of Halloween was my Facebook pages, all of my Facebook pages.
Great.
I posted that. And I did posts every day that were Halloween oriented and funny and fictional things.
And now
we're doing a whole month of Thanksgiving, and I will be posting every day between now and Thanksgiving, which by the way falls very late this year. Thanksgiving is on the 28th of the month, which is really late for Thanksgiving. I will be posting stories and anecdotes on my Facebook pages all of them about Thanksgiving, and they're funny and silly, and I hope you enjoy them. But I want to get back to Gwendolyn right now, because, of course, our show is always sponsored by DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And I want Gwendolyn to tell us about a fragrance that you think we should be shopping for on DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's all one word, by the way, on your computer if you go there during the show tonight, DaughtersOfIsis.com. Tell us about a fragrance that you think is really perfect for this Mercury in retrograde catastrophe that we're in right now.
Well, I actually do have a Mercury retrograde oil. And
okay.
It's a wonderful compliment to get you through. It's a variation of, and you're going to appreciate this, my Virgo Zodiac blend, because it keeps us attuned to the details. It's blended for just that specific purpose and to get by all of the little aggravations that crop up during a Mercurial retrograde. This one is in our good friend Scorpio, who is very dark. Very dark, very
right.
deep, very, you know, I am speaking, so you will pay attention. And so we are not just divers. When we dive this time, we dive deep. So it's a time right now of self-reflection, which is coming up. it's just passed with Hallows. All Hallows Eve, or Samhain, as we call it on my side of camp. And there's the Mercury retrograde, but it's also a time I'm making some hand-turned incense, and it's going to be limited collections, and I've taken some of my very best blends and most popular, and I've created, do you know what dupe is?
No.
Dupe, it was made in India, and what they used to do is take the, now get this, and they still do over there, and it's some wonderful stuff. It's the stuff that's in the stones of the temples over there. The scent of it is so pervasive.
My God.
They would take dupe, which would be, it would be woods and resins and precious oils blended in to cow manure, really clean cow manure. And they would roll it out in long, that's where stick incense started, but they didn't need it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it came from that. Now I am making my kind of dupe, which has no cow manure in it. It has sandalwood powder is my base, and then I put
in. How do you spell it? How do you spell the word dupe? How do you spell it?
D-H-O-O-P, dupe.
Dupe, D-H-O-O-P.
Right.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of versions of it. My version is I use herbs and berries and flowers and I use a lot of precious. I'm working with a mimosa resin and benzoin, which is Strax and amber, and it's very sweet, and a nice copal. And
my God, what a sorceress you are. You're a cross between a chemist and a sorceress. Can I ask you a question? Are you a character in the Harry Potter things? Are you sure that as a young girl, you're actually not Hermione Granger? Perhaps you're Hermione Granger.
Actually, I've been accused of being a closet McGonagall for years.
McGonagall,
like,
oh my goodness, yes.
But I have been thrown out of so many prep schools, but yes, I'm a Granger. I got into trouble.
I am thrilled to hear about this fragrance. I can't believe, and I must tell you,
well,
I'm thinking right
cones.
Now.
They're little cones, you know, and
they're not
going to be that cheap. I'm figuring probably 6 to 8 in a box, and the little box will have different ones, doubles, a big one and a small one of each. And I'm thinking about $35, but it would be very worth it because these are like, you know, very special occasion kind of little cone you burn, and they're very pervasive. And they're made for temple. You know, this is how they used to create the stuff in ancient Egypt, and Greece followed suit
right.
with it. And this is what they would burn prior to any kind of event or any kind of religious event, or, you know, and it knocks the crap out of the silica blend that the boys come through before the, you know, testicle spectacles of the
right.
priests before mass.
Now, can I ask you something, Gwendolyn? On these incense cones, do they work like a scented candle where you would light them, and then as soon as they began to smoke and created the smell, then you would extinguish them rather than keep burning them? Because a lot of what people do with scented candles is they burn them and they think they're supposed to burn them for like 2 hours. It's like, no. This isn't a candle you burn. You burn
That's
it
correct.
Until the wax melts a little bit. Then you blow it out. You know, these candles cost $200, $100, $200 from Ralph Lauren or from whoever. And it's like people think they're supposed to be burning them and on and on and on. No, you're burning up the fragrance. You melt the wax a little bit and blow it out. And that's how it works. So is that, what would you have them do with the incense cones that you're doing?
Well, with the tiny cones that you can burn, you know, that would be like burn that prior to a party or
And you would
gathering.
Use that whole cone up, that whole little cone up.
The little one up, yes, and it would just put the whole scent through the whole house,
I
the
get
whole
it.
Area.
Sure.
Then the larger cone is one that you can turn on and off, like the candle. You light it, you
right.
use it, and then you snuff it and use it again. And thank you for saying that, because a lot of people don't know with handmade, hand-turned, or hand-rolled incense. That's what you want to do. I made my kaiase, and these take like 2 weeks to dry. Okay.
Wow.
They are
wow.
My hands are like my left hand, which I'm a right-handed person. I'm not a southpaw, but my left hand has been working too, and it's like yelling at me right now. You know, put on the CBD stuff, lady. I mean, it's like,
that's funny. By the way, you reminded me of something. Oh, go ahead.
It's a therapy. Now, I make these. I choose the different herbs and resins and flowers and the powders. I mean, I've got Himalayan cedarwood and the Mako powder that helps to keep
right.
them kindred and stuff. But I put the essential oils into all of this, too. So you're getting
Gwendolyn,
all of
now-
it.
I want to cut in right here, because I want you to remind people when they buy things from daughtersofisis.com or essential oils, you brought up that there are essential oils that you can buy that you're not supposed to put on your skin. That you're supposed to either sprinkle on your sheets or in a sachet in your drawer, or you are supposed to use them in an infuser or whatever. Would you please tell us again what you do with essential oils to have them in a room?
A vapor bath.
Yes, yes. Would you tell us about that?
It's called an aromatherapy lamp. A lot of people buy these really expensive ones that are like mechanized, and they spritz it into the atmosphere either constantly or at intervals. And that's fine and well. I like the old-fashioned elements, so I have a little aromatherapy lamp, which is like a little potpourri. You can get them with tea lights anywhere. And all you do is put some water in the little bowl and then add a drop or two on top of the water, and it vaporizes the essential oils. It doesn't.
And the little candle goes underneath. And
right.
heats it and evaporates it. I want to
water.
Stop for a second. I want to stop for a second because I want to make sure that people understand. You put a little bit of water in the basin on these, and these little tiny lamp things are for sale all over the place. And then you put drops of oil in the water. You don't just put drops of oil on the basin dry and then burn it, because you actually, although you can have that smell, what you're actually doing is burning it up. You're actually scorching it is what you're doing.
And,
you're ruining it.
And the bouquet is not the same. The bouquet has lost some of its power. It's like when you buy a mist, you know, essential oil, they say essential oil spray. The majority, in fact, I only know of one other person who does what I do. I'm sure there's a few others who have figured it out too, because there's a lot of very good people out there. But people put emulsifiers in to their sprays, and that ruins the true bouquet of what you're getting. So when you buy one of our misters, it's merely essential oils, distilled charged water, and a few flower essences, which are just a charged water again. They're homeopathy. And I have a little sticker I put on the top of every sprayer that says shake sweetly. And that's so that you disperse the oils before you spray. And then you'll see the oils as they're on the top of the water, and sometimes some of them are on the bottom. But if you've got an emulsifier, which could be anything from soap to a chemical, in the water to disperse them all evenly, well, where's the fun in that?
I mean, you know? Right.
It smells like roses that got off at 22nd Street, you know? I mean,
right.
It's not it. But,
thank
you for asking. I appreciate that very much.
No, thank you for making sure that we do it right. You know,
I will
it's important.
Mommy, a box of my dupe, and you will be able to. And I will tell you this, especially a New Yorker living in the city, I'm so glad you've got that beautiful bay window, because you can burn it, because it's completely organic. You could burn it even in a potted plant on soil that's, you know, by the side. And you can open the window if it becomes too much, you know what I mean, before you get it out or what have you. Because sometimes they are very strong. They, like you said, you put them out after you let them fly for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you, Mommy. Thank you, Mommy.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Again, daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Do run, do not walk, to their website and check out their products. Gwendolyn's too modest to say it, but they are now up to 43,000 products that they have available. It will take you 2 weeks to go through the catalog. I mean, it's just amazing the things that they produce. And by the way, I love this new series of limited edition products that you're doing. I love that you're doing this more like it's kind of like your Rolls Royce line of products. It's like run, do not walk. There's a limited amount of some of these products, because some of the ingredients that Gwendolyn uses are extremely rare and expensive. So it's, you know, when you see things listed, get them while you can. I love this being an experiential. You know, the thing about doing this is, as opposed to acquiring more clutter for the house, these are experiences. It's like taste and fragrance experiences. And I think that that's a really wonderful way to be exploring gift giving the holiday season, is to surprise your friends, your family, or even yourself in your own Christmas stocking with something wonderful from daughtersofisis.com. I want to just address a couple of things. I want to just, because I'm looking at the time, we've got 20 minutes left in the broadcast. Couple of quick things. Gwendolyn and I, since we started this adventure over a year ago, we entered it and we knew that every news cycle, every week, we couldn't believe that the headlines would be more appalling a week later, and they were. And then we couldn't believe that the headlines could be more appalling a day later. And then we couldn't believe that news cycles now last an hour, that you turn on any one of the networks, certainly Fox or MSNBC, and the headlines can change hourly. There's news bulletins because of the way politics is being handled in this country. And we have gone through episodes of Come Now, Don't Salt that have been only politics. And we've gone through episodes of Come Now, Don't Salt that are merely recipes and gossip and chuckly news. I just want to address something, because when we don't broadcast for a week or two or three, because either, you know, there's technical things that are going on, or I'm traveling and I'm not reachable. The one thing that is fascinating is that when we take a couple of weeks off, the headlines gallop forward. So the fact that California is in flames from north of San Francisco down to Beverly Hills, and that funding is being withheld for this. Funding is being offered to Putin for fires in Siberia by the United States. This doesn't even seem possible. That headlines have been going on that a man named Mahoud Villalaz, a citizen of the United States who happened to have been born in Peru, but who has become an American citizen. He's not a green card holder. He is an American citizen. And he was attacked by a 61-year-old white man in Milwaukee. Amazing. I'm going to be in Milwaukee this coming week. And acid was thrown into his face by a 61-year-old white man who attacked him and accused him of being an invader and being an illegal citizen, and he should go back to his country, etc., threw acid in his face. Richard Holzer, some idiot in Pueblo, Colorado, where I was just there in Denver. These are ground zero for red voters, these places, Milwaukee, Colorado. Richard Holzer, fortunately, had been duped by undercover FBI agents portraying themselves as white supremacists, and had been reading his posts and gave him phony pipe bombs for him to set off in a synagogue there. And of course, then he was apprehended and caught. And you should see his mugshot. He is leering at the camera. There's no sense of fear or anything. You should see him. He looks like Satan himself. He looks like Dick Cheney's son in his mugshot for the FBI once he was arrested. There's no sense of sorrow or apology that he wanted to blow up a synagogue and at the very least destroy it, if not kill people in it. There was a point [S2] Wow. [S1] At which he claimed that he was going to blow it up after it had closed and you'd get him there at night, but he was going to go in there during the day. The bottom line is this: these crimes are now being committed over and over and over again, not by Arabs, not by your damn Muslims or Hindis or whatever. These are being committed by white Christian family values Americans, people who consider themselves having a right to be here. And this is who we are seeing are committing these crimes overwhelmingly. Are there instances where someone who is, you know, a Muslim who's angry and has decided to get a gun and shoot people? Are there situations where, you know, the Boston Marathon anniversary came up, you know, with that bombing? Yes, of course. But overwhelmingly, terrorist activity in this country, domestic terrorism, has been perpetrated by white Americans born here. Native-born Americans, born here with a history of you know, families here, and they espouse this kind of terrorism while claiming to be Christian, family values, straight. They're always heterosexual. It's all of this is going on. I can't tell you the contempt I have for my own demographic. I am appalled and have been appalled for ages now, as you know, listeners, but this has escalated it goes worse and worse and worse. And all I can say is, do not hold up the statistics to me of 47% of America now feels that Trump should be, impeached and gotten rid of, as opposed to 43%. 47% to 43%? Dear God. Dear God, until it is 90% of this country wants an end to this horrible nightmare, this grotesque, excremental nightmare, this age of an orange furor and his minions running this country, until it is 90% of these people, we will only have hand-wringing that he was a martyr. They will be apologists. We will be surrounded by collaborators and conspiracy theorists and quislings. Until it is overwhelming, until it is at least as dynamic a number as what happened on the morning that Nixon got into the helicopter. And even then, when he got into the helicopter, 21% of America still was screaming at their TV screens, "No, no, don't get into the helicopter. We love you." There was 20% of this country that was still granite hard in support of Nixon. And we are at 43%. Oh, dear God. And if you people think that this is okay, that it's 47 to 43 or whatever it is as of this minute, travel the way Mummy does all around the country. Go to Fargo, North Dakota. Go to, Milwaukee and Denver. Go to the suburbs of these towns and see what people are saying and thinking about this person. And by the way, not millionaires, not billionaires, the benighted, sad suburbanites, the people, plumbers, who are working their asses off, who think that somehow this guy, this thug and his friends are friends of the working man. It is inconceivable that this neo-Nazi nightmare continues just the way it did in Germany in the 1930s, where people who were sending their sons and daughters into the war machine of Germany thought that Hitler was their friend. And it was only when their cities were lying in ruin that some of them actually said, gee, I guess it wasn't true. I guess he really wasn't our friend. And even then, the Americans and the British had to denazify Germany, because there were still people in the smoldering ruins missing an eye or their jaw or both their arms, or their daughters and sons were dead, their children were dead. They still had to, quote, be denazified because they still were in thrall to this bizarre lie. So I'm just telling you that that's what I've been living with on my travels. I send you my cute little Tourette's, but the reality is that I have breakfast in diners and see people wearing MAGA hats everywhere and talking at the next table with their three teeth in their mouth, you know, and their dirty fingernails and their toolboxes going, he surely is my friend. I don't want none of them fags taking over our country. That Pete Buttapoke is Satan's imp. He's a fag, and it's inconceivable.
He's a centrist too. He's a compromiser also. So
but you know what I'm saying, Gwendolyn.
I do. I also know that what the White Rose Society in Germany, and that a lot of Germans were just goddamn scared of the freaking, SS and the way that the youth Nazis were programmed to go and beat the hell out of anyone who rose against them. And the sigh of relief when Hitler was, dead under the rubble. But
well, there was, but there was still, and in Italy, I mean, talk about passion. There's no one more passionate than an angry
Vichy
Italian.
France.
the Italians turned on Mussolini and his girlfriend and their friends. I mean, they did everything but disembowel them, on the street and hang them upside down. But the bottom line is that there is still this affection, this huge affection in this country for something that is completely an illusion. It is a delusion by the working people.
You're right.
And it is frightening. And until you have lived, you know, Gwendolyn, where you're living, you're living in a completely contaminated state. Florida, I mean, there's parts of Florida that certainly are thinking clearly, but 90% of Florida is, completely benighted and enthralled to guns.
Well, do you know the thing is, here I am in what you would call a red county, right? As far as it really goes, my mother would have called this being in the country. And it's suburbia, though. It's like, you know, the old neighborhoods down south, really. But we had in the 2016, the county itself actually tipped to blue. It actually tipped out for Hillary.
Right. I remember,
we had the Trump boys, and they're still around. And I actually lived across the street from one who just really didn't know any better. But then Cousin Bob here, he's a genuine Florida cracker. That means his family came from Florida and he grew up. And he has always been appalled at all of these things and much of the root. But he never got involved in any of it. But, you know, he asked me to register him to vote Democrat this year. And I thought, you know, things are changing. Things are changing. And who is the majority gender in this country who does get up and vote? You know? And I know they say that the white women all go vote for Trump. I don't buy that one. I don't. I'm here to say, I'm here to blow butterflies up your ass, right? I'm here to be the Pollyanna, the cosmic Pollyanna. But I actually do think that all this exposure of all this patriarchy and absolute corruption had to happen so that we would wake up. And at the same time, you know, there's always been these haters. You and I both know.
Of course, how
these haters have voted, but they were not socially acceptable until this last time around because no one's ever cleaned their closets out completely. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Well, I'm hoping you're right. And of course, I live in hope. But I do have to say that, and I worried about this. All the video and all the posting about the Nationals game where people were quote unquote booing Trump. Every time I heard the film, the video and heard the soundtrack from that, it was booing and cheering. It was lock 'em up mixed with a lot of yelling. It wasn't clearly, you know, 100,000 people all screaming in unison, lock him up or get rid of him. It wasn't. And what's especially depressing about it, you know, so Fox spun it that it was, you know, lots of people wonderful, happy about Trump being there and loving him and Melania and everything. And then, of course, the MSNBC crowd and CBS were that it was booing and you know, lock him up and everything. Again, to me,
it was half and half.
And until it is 90%, until people begin to try to burn the stadium down and people are charging the Secret Service men, they didn't hate Trump enough. And the evidence of this is that today, whatever his name is, Suzuki, and the Nationals went to the White House and out on the Truman balcony or whatever, there they all were playing huggy and kissy face with Trump. And so it's like, well, until a team of all of them says, no, we're not going to go to the White House. We're not going to eat your stupid McDonald's burgers and you're an idiot. As long as people continue to go and hug him, then this is going to be the fuel that those people on Fox and everything need to say, you see, he is still our beloved king. And that's the problem is that we look blue state voters or blue voters, we look like we are in fact spinning the news ourselves. We look like we're the fake news ourselves. And we have got to make sure that we register. We've got to make sure that we vote. We've got to make sure that Jill Stein and Gary Johnson and anyone else, Tulsi Gabbard or whatever her stupid name is, we've got to make sure that these people are absolutely not a choice. We cannot have people vote for Jill Stein because, well, her intentions are right. She is pariah. She is an absolute anathema. We have got to make sure that we register and vote. And we cannot.
Everyone I know who did that before has learned their lesson. The people who voted for Johnson, the people who voted for Stein. The thing I hear the most of anymore is vote blue no matter who. You know,
of course,
Well, that's
it is sad to see our candidates falling away, and you know the bickering, which of course is part of democracy. You know, it's hard to see people, you know, incensed about one candidate or another, and gleeful that you know Beto O'Rourke dropped out, and gleeful about it. Like that he had no value ever on any issue. It's like, really?
I haven't seen
Gwendolyn.
That.
Oh, my God. And Gwendolyn, by the way, just because I don't agree with any one of them, you know, or completely, that none of them are perfect, Beto O'Rourke, I pray that smart and educated and introspective 40-year-old man stays front and center in politics.
Oh, yeah.
Was he perfect in every way? No.
Him
but you know what? He said things that were profound. I loved what he had to say about, you know, no, we are going to come down to, we're going to come to your front door. We're going to kick it in and we're going to take your AK-47s away. You don't need Pentagon level weapons in your home. You do not need to be collecting bazookas in your home. This is ridiculous and was not part of the Second Amendment. It's ridiculous. George Washington and the founding fathers did not want farmers in 1789 having cannons, state-of-the-art cannons available to every farmer. They were not allowed to have the top-line weapons that the colonists were using in war. They had muskets, and they had weapons that would allow them to go out and kill deer and rabbits for their food. But they were not all equipped. The Second Amendment said nothing about, and by the way, if you're a farmer in the colony of Virginia, you should be allowed to have 30 cannons on your property in case there's another insurrection.
Do you know what they're doing right now in Turkey since the Turkish president has been out killing Kurds and stuff? The people in Turkey are showing up in protest, but their protest is silence. They just gather in crowds in town squares and stare.
Right.
And I mean, that is remarkable.
And
that
it's so eloquent.
Remarkable.
I'm looking at the clock and we're
right.
Yeah.
The
Kurd
right.
situation is in a sane world, someone who had done what he'd done. And I have no, we can't talk about it now because we're out of time. That no military person, that no person on the Joint Chiefs of Staff has taken the law into his own hands, that no one, you know, the veterans overwhelmingly voted for George Bush and overwhelmingly voted for Trump. And yet they're now wringing their hands and going, this is treason against our allies that supported us and made it possible that American soldiers didn't die in droves in the whole Kurdish situation. No one is standing up and simply taking the law into their own hands. And I can't say anymore because we're really out of time. I have to make a couple of announcements. I'm sorry we ran out of time. DaughtersOfISIS.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, is our sponsor every week. And the chairman of the board, Gwendolyn, is our wonderful producer. I want to remind you that we're on Monday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time now, no longer daylight time. Do join us. Join Mummy every week, every day at 3 in the morning if you want, at SybilSays.com and SybilBrunchen.com and on the Lollipop Guild. which are all pages on Facebook, and you can also find me on YouTube and on Twitter. And the last thing I'd like to say is that Mummy will have an announcement about a show she's going to be doing with her pals, Pansy Hansen and Zola Powell and Doris Dear, and we will be doing a show called The Few, not The View, The Few. We'll be doing it in New York City very soon. Date and details to be announced very soon. I want to thank you all for joining me. I want to thank Gwendolyn, as always, for sponsoring our show. I will see you next Monday with all sorts of new information and gossip, and you can call in next week. And Mummy will be coming to you, I believe, from Milwaukee. Anyway, Gwendolyn, take us on out, okay? I love you, honey.
I love you.
Good night.
Thank you.